Happy Friday, everybody. It is time for Locked On Brewers. We're doing a flashback Friday today instead of throwback Thursday. We're going to look back at our top games of the year. The countdown continues. Don't go anywhere. This is Locked On Brewers.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Dominic Petronio. Thanks for making us your first listen of the day wherever you get your podcast, right here on the Locked On Network. This is Locked On Brewers. I'm pleased to be joined by the one, the only, Vinny Rotino, of course, the pre- and post-game show analyst on Bally Sports Wisconsin during the season. I am the statistician for Bally Sports Wisconsin, so you can catch us on Twitter. You can see our handles if you're watching on YouTube, but if you're listening, at Dom_Catronio for myself. Good luck spelling Catronio. And for Vinny Rotino, all one word with two T's. So Vinny, let's see. We talked to John Boy earlier this week. We had a heck of a mailbag Monday, and here we are, our third episode of the week. And, well, baseball is still locked out, but we actually do have a little bit of stuff to talk about. But do you have anything to bring to the table before we get into today's episode?
Yeah, no. I mean, other than the fact that it's really, really cold here in Wisconsin right now, and I noticed that on your dry erase board there, it says, I'm cold, which thanks for stating the obvious, because I'm cold too. Look, here's the thing with winters in Wisconsin. I am born and raised here. I'm never leaving here. My wife and I are going to stay here forever. And I hate the winter. So this is the next two
months.
Yeah,
we talked about that on Monday. I know. Yeah.
Next 2 months, though, I'm telling you, I just feel it in my bones lately with how cold it's been and the wind. Ugh. So anyway, all right, let's get back to it. But
well, as folks can hear, and if you're watching as well, I'm back in Milwaukee. You know, it sounds better finally. I'm not just on my mobile to go type setup for my endeavors in Phoenix. But yes, I am back in the cold. I got back in on Wednesday night and I looked down on the ground and there's snow on the ground and my car is covered in ice. And I was just like, yeah, this is what they meant by wait till January. So I get it now. Yeah, it's a different breed up here for you guys, and especially something when you're wearing shorts on Christmas Day in Phoenix and then come here with a beanie and three layers and walking to my car. So that's the harsh reality that I'm living in right now, and we're back in Milwaukee. But hey, this is going to be a fun episode. We are looking back at the top 20 games of the season. We are continuing our countdown today. This is, let me double check the numbers here, right? It's number 13 and 12, or is it 14 and 13? I should have known this. It's
2019,
it's been
18, 17. We did 15 and
math.
16 last time. So this is
14, 13. Yeah, so this is 14, 13. For those who don't know, you can go back and listen to the last couple Thursdays. We have been catching up with our countdown and the games of the year. We're going backwards, so 20-1. So maybe the games that you may be obviously thinking of, like the Vogelbach Grand Slam or the no-hitter, things like that. We haven't got to those yet because those are going to be in the top five, obviously. But I think this first half is really fun to do because we remember things about these games that we haven't talked about yet. And if you want to go back and listen, they're in our every Thursday for the last couple of weeks for our Throwback Thursdays. But before we get into the games, we did have some news to talk about. And Will Salmon, the writer for The Athletic, reported and went down to St. Louis to chat with a certain Devin Williams. And this was a very interesting interview and quite frankly revealing because when he broke his hand in September, after the celebration, it kind of went radio silent after he made a statement to the media and statement to the players. He was not with the team during the postseason. And this is really his first chance to kind of tell his side of the story, clear the air, and tell everything what went down to his extent and the guilt that he felt during the postseason and how hard it was for him to stand up there and talk to his teammates and tell them about the mistake that he made. So, Vinny, I just want your immediate gut reaction to this article that Will Salmon wrote in The Athletic.
Well, let me just say first and foremost, Will Salmon is an extremely talented writer, and if you haven't read it yet, please go and write and read that article. You can buy The Athletic. The subscription's pretty cheap. I think you can get it for a couple of bucks a month. I just re-upped mine for that last week, but it was a phenomenal article. And my gut reaction to this whole thing was, well, first of all, let me just say my gut reaction when it first happened was, you got to be kidding me, right? This is the Brewers' chances to win the World Series, and all of a sudden one of their star relievers is punching a wall for no reason. And what, after reading the article, my take on it is this was a great article and great insight into what this player was thinking and feeling at the time. And he had no excuse. It was just a mistake. It was just a dumb mistake and something that a 20-something-year-old does. I mean, my goodness, I have done some dumb things in my 20s.
Likewise.
And everybody has. And unfortunately, this impacted the team in such a dramatic way that it was magnified at the time. I thought also it was kind of interesting how this kind of has gone by the wayside and hasn't really been talked about since. Obviously, because the Brewers were knocked out and his role in the playoffs, I don't think really affected the fact that they lost to the Braves. I think the article pointed out that he could have pitched that inning where Josh Hader gave up that home run to Freddie Freeman in Game 5 of the playoffs against the Braves. Yeah, I think that was my gut reaction, the fact that this kid owned up to a stupid mistake, and I thought that was really cool. And the fact that he has moved on and kind of forgiven himself, which is important for him to move on as a person and then also as a player. What people don't understand, and I'm getting long-winded here, but I think this is important to understand. What people don't understand is that what you do in your personal life as a professional baseball player impacts what you can do on the field and what you do on the field. It's all intertwined. And so the fact that he can forgive himself and move on is important for him as a player and obviously as a person as well. So I thought that was cool.
I think the best quote from this that Will managed to get out of Devin goes like this, talking about trust. And I quote from Devin Williams, quote, "Trust isn't something where I can just tell you something and you're going to trust me. You know what I mean? Like, I have to go out there and show you and show you and show you and show you again and build that back. There's nothing that I can necessarily do besides that to regain that trust." That's a mature growth moment for Devin. And he describes it was a drunken moment. Right. He cleared up all the rumors. Like, no, this was just me. This wasn't a significant other. This was just me being dumb. This was just completely foolish. And he understood that. The good news out of this article, too, is that he's healthy. He's throwing again. There will be no setbacks whenever spring training does begin. And the plan was for him to be pitching in the World Series if the Brewers had got that far. So it seemed like things were going to work well for him. And I thought it was just truly heartbreaking that he had to watch from home. Granted, it was the right decision in the long run to have him away from the team and not be a distraction and things like that, which he mentioned in the article. But the big thing that I'm going to remember is that, yes, it was in the eighth inning, and Will mentions this, just like you just said. Josh Hader was still on the mound. It's the guy you still wanted in the long run. Maybe it was an inning earlier than you actually wanted in a tie game, but nonetheless, it was Josh Hader, and it was Freddie Freeman, who is a generational player against a generational pitcher in the playoffs. That's what this happens. There's a winner and a loser. So you tip your cap, you move on, and you take it on the chin, and we'll see you in 2022, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, again, I think you hit the nail on the head, the fact that he has grown, he's matured from this. And what I think is kind of cool, too, is that he's probably using this as fuel to improve and to really get after it this offseason. I know he had that shoulder issue last year to begin the season. And so I think we're going to see a pretty good version of Devin Williams. He talked about his grip strength never being stronger right now because he had to rehab that hand. That's really, really important for a pitcher to have a strong grip in order to throw hard. And so I think we're going to see a really good version of Devin Williams on the mound, and maybe he's obviously learned from it, and maybe he'll take a step from this as well.
All right, so shout out to Will Salmon for that article with Devin Williams. Go check it out in The Athletic, as Devin Williams is expected to be ready on time, whenever on time is in spring training. But let's get to the actual point of the episode here, Vinny. We are talking the top 20 games of the year. Today, we continue our list with numbers 14 and numbers 13. Both of these games are absolutely epic extra inning thrillers, and I am not understating that fact. Quite frankly, I was really torn on having both of these games outside of the top 10, but when I made this list and I looked at the whole macro view, there's just no room. This is where they had to be. So number 14 and 13. Before we do that, you know what we're going to talk about, Vinny. We got to talk about Built Bar. The best. It's the new year. The best protein bar. It doesn't taste like a protein bar. It tastes like a candy bar. It's 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, and it's covered in 100% real chocolate, by the way. And it's got 17 grams of protein and 4 carbs. It's a great snack and a great protein bar, and it doesn't taste chalky. It actually has great flavor to it. You've got coconut almond, you've got raspberry, mint brownie, salted caramel, cookies and cream. The list goes on with so many flavors to choose from. Even if you're not a huge fan of working out, you can at least eat something that tastes good, and if it's good for you too. And if you are working out, boom, you've got protein and something that tastes so delicious. So forget the stashes, forget the secret candy areas, and go for something that you're actually going to want to eat. That's Built Bar. And you've got a promo code. You should know it by now. Locked15. Go to built.com, BUILT.com, and use the promo code Locked15, Locked15, and you're going to get 15% off at built.com. Vinny, we are going into the time machine now, my friend.
Love it.
We are going way, way back for game number 14 on this top 20 list. It is back on May 1st against the Los Angeles Dodgers. So May 1st, right off the bat, no Willy Adames yet. This team is, at the time, the best record in the National League at 16-10, and they had just won the first two games of this four-game series against the Dodgers. So they're kind of turning heads in this series right now, saying, wow, the Brewers might be for real. And, oh, by the way, they had 16 guys on the injured list during this series, and that day they actually had added Omar Narvaez to the injured list after he strained his hamstring. So during this week, it was a brutal week. Not only did Narvaez go on the injured list, they also lost Manny Pena onto the injured list with a fractured toe. So they call up Mario Feliciano. More on him a little bit later in this game. But Vinny, we called one of these games, by the way, just for fun, sitting in a booth during this series. Not this game, though. This series is going to be one that I'm going to circle for a long time, as this was the series that you knew that the Brewers were legit, but you didn't know if it was sustainable. Did you feel that as well as May moved along? Because they were 16-10, and they would eventually take 3 out of 4 from the Dodgers, but the way they were doing it just didn't feel comfortable, right?
Yeah, it did not. I mean, I wrote down the lineup because when you look at this box score and some of the OPSs that the Brewers were posting, you're like, this isn't really sustainable, right? But the fact that they were playing so well against the Dodgers without a formidable lineup, and I mean, let me just read off these names. Colton Wong was hitting the best at the time. He had an 878 OPS. Other than that, Vogelbach was in the starting lineup, 560 OPS. Avisel Garcia, guys, 640 OPS at this point in the season. He was really struggling at the beginning. Travis Shaw was in the starting lineup every single day. He had a 700 OPS, 708. That's not great. Jackie Bradley Jr., 597. Luis Urias was playing well, 782. Billy McKinney was in the starting lineup, 701, and Luke Maley. So listen to those names. There's no Christian Yelich, and I know Christian Yelich struggled all year, but at the time, everyone was like, we need Christian Yelich in this lineup, and we need the old version, blah, blah, blah. But that's the lineup, and they're 17-10 after this game, after they win this game. Spoiler alert, they won the game. But best record in the NL with that lineup, obviously the pitching was carrying them, and I think people started to understand, okay, they pitched this well against the Los Angeles Dodgers, and they played this well against the Dodgers, that they are for real, and wait until they get their guys back. That's kind of the feeling that I had, Dom.
So this pitching matchup was Dustin May versus Brandon Woodruff, which on paper everyone's excited about. Dustin May is supposed to be the next, you know, big right-handed power arm with this legit sinker that goes 99 and moves like 10 feet against Woodruff, the guy who's been there, done that, opening day starter. A great matchup that is spoiled two innings into it for a couple of reasons. First, on the very first pitch of the game, Mookie goes yard. It's Mookie Betts. You tip your cap. He had the night off the night prior. It was actually his 23rd career leadoff home run, and it was his first leadoff homer of 2021. Quick trivia for you, Vinny. Do you know who has the most leadoff home runs in MLB history?
Ricky Anderson?
That's correct.
Oh, is
good
it?
Job.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know. Exactly.
I knew that.
Good
okay.
job.
Thanks.
That was. I think that's a pretty obvious okay. one, but I've learned a lot of people don't know the answer to that. So, yes, it is Ricky Anderson. But Mookie goes yard on the first pitch of the game off of Brandon Woodruff. But in the bottom of the first, Luis Urias responds. He hits a home run as well, and the Brewers are right there in it. Tied things up off of May, and then he fast forward to the second inning, and this is where the entire season for the Dodgers changed. And you can attribute this moment to the reason the Dodgers got Max Scherzer, because Dustin May walks off the mound at American Family Field holding his right elbow, done. Tommy John surgery. your heart breaks for a guy as a competitor. Yes, he's on the other team. I get that. But watching a guy know instantly on a pitch, I'm done. This is it. I just blew out my elbow. Have you ever been on the field when something like that happens, Vinny, or have seen that happen maybe when you're scouting and just see, oh, geez, and your heart's just in your stomach, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's never a good sign, especially with a guy that talented. And, you know, I appreciate talent like that, even though he was about to shove against the Brewers and he was shoving against the rest of the league. You just appreciate that kind of talent, and my heart definitely went out for him.
Yeah, it's crazy. So fast forward to the rest of the game here. Dodgers took a lead on a triple by Corey Seager with two outs that nearly was an epic catch by Jackie Bradley Jr. But then in the bottom half of the inning, again, the Brewers responded in the fourth. Travis Shaw, you'll hear his name in a little bit too, hit an absolute tank off the scoreboard in center field. It went 443 feet. It was his second longest homer of the season. And it went 108.3 miles an hour off the bat and no doubt blast to tie the game at two. Both pitchers, or I should say staff for the Dodgers, and then Woodruff settled down from there. Woodruff made it through six innings, only allowing two runs, got out of some jams. These teams were a combined 5-for-23 with runners in scoring position in this game. They combined to leave 20 runners on base. That doesn't even tell the half of it, though, because the middle and late innings of this game, they had some offense, but no one could seem to get the hit, and this game would eventually go to extra innings. And remember this number. So 5-for-23 total in the game with runners in scoring position, right?
Mm-hmm.
The teams were a combined 4-for-6 with runners in scoring position in extras. So that means during the game, they were 1-for-17 with runners in scoring position. I mean, three of the runs came on homers, and the other run came on a two-out triple with a runner on first. So that's not even a hit with a runner in scoring position. It was an absolutely wacky pitcher's duel game. And from the Dodgers' perspective, the going to extra innings was the last thing they needed because, for one, Dustin May is out of the game. They're relying on their bullpen. And the night prior, they had used almost their entire bullpen on a planned bullpen day. It was brutal for them to have to get through this game against a really good team in the Brewers, so they were really digging for scraps to this point in the game. So fast forward to the 10th inning. With the placed runner, the Dodgers do get a run. Now, this is my favorite part of looking at these games, Vinny. I completely forgot about this. Do you remember who pinch hit for the Dodgers in the top of the 10th inning?
Well, no, I don't. Not off the top of my head.
Well, it's not a position player. It was Clayton Kershaw.
That's right.
They were out of bench players because they were in the bullpen the entire game. They kept having to do double switches. Dave Roberts had to get creative. And with two runners on, with one out, they had to bring Clayton Kershaw in to swing the bat, not to bunt. To swing the bat, he struck out. Nonetheless, Drew Rasmussen gets out of this jam in the 10th inning, and I've talked about this plenty of times before. You know, if J.P. Fireisen isn't pitching well, if Drew Rasmussen isn't pitching well, you do not acquire Willy Adames. So this was a big moment for the Brewers. A big shout-out to Drew Rasmussen getting out of the 10th with only that place runner scoring. A sac fly in the bottom of the 10th from Luis Urias tied things up, and then the 11th got absolutely wacky. The Dodgers get two runs in the top of the inning, one placed runner and a couple of walks. Things were getting hairy. And then in the bottom of the inning, Brewers are down to their final strike with Avi Garcia, down by a run. He hit a ground ball through the left side under the backhand of Corey Seager to tie the game and extend the game. And then Travis Shaw, the mayor of Ding Dong City, baby, down the right field line, wins it for the Brewers 6-5. So it doesn't really tell you the whole story. Yes, 6-5 to final. But it was 2-2 heading into extra innings, and this was the second walk-off of the year already for the Brewers. A great call, as always, on that as well. And it was just one of those games that you're going to think back on, like, wow, that clinched a series against the reigning World Series champions in a four-game series, and you needed absolutely everybody on your bench. Those wins seem like they can carry a team for a long time.
Yeah, and they did. It did. And like we just talked about, it kind of put the Brewers on the map as one of the best teams in the NL. The fact that they were playing against the Dodgers and playing so well against the Dodgers with such a thin and kind of banged up roster. And so, yeah. And here's the other thing. Their bullpen really stepped up in this game. Right. I mean, you had Suter, you had Devin Williams, who had not been pitching well up until this point. He had a 4.22 ERA. Obviously, Josh Hader was phenomenal all season long, was able to keep the team there. But then also Travis Shaw stepped up, right? And we thought Travis – I thought Travis Shaw was back. I thought he was 100% back at this point. He had been swinging the bat well, that bomb off the scoreboard. So you just had a bunch of dudes step up, and we saw that all year from this team. And like I said, I just read off the lineup that started in this game, and it was just like it's a bunch of ragtag dudes. And that's what this Brewers team does, and that's what Council said in the postgame conference or press conference, is that these guys continue just to step up and do whatever they have to do to win. And I know it was early in the season, but that was their MO all season long. Great teams figure ways out to win. They had depth, depth in their bullpen, depth in their lineup, obviously depth in the rotation. So it was a kind of a culmination of what we saw all year long in this one game.
Do you remember who scored the game-winning run in this game,
Feliciano,
by the way?
Feliciano. My, yep, my
exactly. guy. He drew a big walk earlier in that bottom of the 11th inning, yeah, and made it all the way around to score on the Shaw. And by the way, Betts got to that ball pretty quickly on the single by Shaw, but he just overthrew home. It would have been a bang-bang play even if it was accurate, but kudos to Feliciano. Gets called up, draws a walk, and scores game-winning run on a walk-off, and that's all we saw of him all year.
That's
so
right.
Kudos to Feliciano for that. To wrap things up on that game, that actually started a bad stretch for the Brewers. So they're 17-10, right? They would go 14-12 over their next 16 games and thus lead them to acquire Willy Adames at the end of that 16-game stretch. It's amazing how when you look back, like, wow, that was an epic win. This is amazing. Then things go south quickly, and because they go south, you get Willy Adames, and the rest is history.
Yeah.
Pretty wild. Absolutely. Yeah. So we're going to get to game number 13, the second game of our countdown here today. Before we do that, we're going to tell you about Bet Online. They want to wish you a happy new betting new year as we continue to march to the playoffs and beyond. Last night, our friend of the program, Brian Anderson, had the call from Madison Square Garden, the Knicks and the Celtics. Absolutely insane games. Knicks came back from down 25. Maybe you bet on that. You could have with Bet Online, the number one spot for all the sports wagering here in 2022. It's a new year and a new desktop and mobile website. You can sign up today and use the promo code LOCKEDON. You're going to get a 50% welcome bonus thanks to our friends at BetOnline on your first deposit. So again, you're going to get 50% back. You throw down 100, you're getting 50 back for you there with the promo code LOCKEDON. That's at BetOnline. From football, basketball, combat sports, favorite Vegas games, they've got amazing offers for all year long. The fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports, it's BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, back in the time machine, Vinny. August 18th, we're going to St. Louis. The Brewers coming into this game with a 73-47 record. They're 8.5 games clear of first place in the Central. They're seeming to run away with it. August is going really, really well. We've taken on the Cardinals, who are still kind of sputtering for the wild card spot. They're 61-57, and on paper, another really good pitching matchup, right? Freddy Peralta versus Jack Flaherty. And once again, this game is blown up early due to injury. However, three runs were scored early against Freddie. Paul Goldschmidt had an RBI double, Lars Nootbaar, and Nolan Arenado, the big boppers for the Cardinals. I just want to point this out real quick, Vinny. Paul Goldschmidt absolutely dominates the Brewers. And I know there are plenty of Brewers fans listening like, yeah, we know. Don't remind us. I looked at the numbers again. This is absurd, Vinny. He's in 90 career starts against the Brewers, about 400 plate appearances, hitting .324. A 1,021 OPS, 22 homers, 65 RBIs, and 28 doubles for good measure. That's the sign of a really freaking good ball player.
Yeah, I mean, and he had been kind of struggling in his tenure with the Cardinals at times, and he really figured it out in the second half. So those numbers are also there's those numbers from last year and the first half was he struggling as well. So there's some numbers in there. There's a stretch there where he was kind of struggling overall, and those numbers are still ridiculous. It's crazy how good he is. He's a Brewers killer. I hate to see him come up every single time.
Absolutely. So this game, down early 3-0, and then it gets worse because Freddy Peralta exits the game after what was initially called on an awkward swing and miss. You saw him kind of grab at his shoulder. He does the bucket foot thing where he really doesn't want to be in the box and swings and was fooled by a Flaherty breaking ball, and you see him grimace and you think at first like, oh, he's just mad he struck out. Then you realize he's not coming back out onto the field. And then this is mid-August and everyone's going, oh no, there is no time left in the season if he is seriously injured. What's going on with Freddie Peralta? What was your reaction when you see something like that happen?
Personally, I love Freddie Peralta probably more than anybody. I absolutely love this guy. I think he's such a competitor. He really does bring a new element of energy, of life, of excitement to this pitching staff and to the team. And when he went down with that shoulder, I held my breath. I was like, uh-oh. I knew the team was probably going to still make the playoffs. I mean, they had a huge lead at that point. But I thought the World Series chances were probably going to be starting to slip a little bit because Freddie Peralta is that important to the pitching staff. I thought the team, fast forwarding, I'm jumping ahead a little bit. I thought the team handled this beautifully. It was brilliant how they handled it. It turned out not to be that serious. Other teams may have pushed their one of their top starters because I think he probably was telling the team, I'm good, I can go, because that's what I was reading in the articles after this little tweak of the shoulder. But they held him off a couple of weeks. They let him come back into that next start, just two innings, and then he was off to the races. So I thought they handled it beautifully, and he ramped right up into the postseason. He was back up to 95, 96. I thought it was great the way they handled it.
And I think it's interesting that you bring that up, the way the Brewers handled him. And you look at the benefit of having a big lead in your division for a playoff spot, and you look at what happened to Max Scherzer in this postseason, right? Admitting, my arm is completely dead. They had to use him like crazy during the last stretch because they're still trying to win the West. They feel like they had a chance to catch the Giants, which they ultimately didn't. Had to use Scherzer in the wild card game. Then they had to use him out of the bullpen in game five against the Giants, and it was just an epic series. And then Scherzer against the Braves says, my arm's dead. I can't go any longer. And Max saying that. Is a lot. Kudos to Freddie to being mature and understanding this is for the greater good. And he did pitch well, albeit in a brief outing in the postseason. He did pitch in the postseason, and he definitely performed. And we'll see what is to come to him next season. So he exited, and this is where we tip our cap to the Brewers' bullpen. To me, this was the game that made me realize they had the best bullpen in the National League. Not that there was any doubt, really. Right. But when you take out Williams and Hader, and you have to fill all of these innings, you know, he's done after two. And you bring in Hunter Strickland, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's got some momentum going. He gets a good inning out of the way. And then you get, after that, you go with Jake Cousins, and he was lighting the world on fire. He's still not allowed an earned run to this point. Then Brent Suter leaves a man stranded. Miguel Sanchez leaves a man stranded. And you go down the list, Daniel Norris gives you a quality inning. And then all of a sudden, the Brewers are hanging around, still only down 3-2 at this point, thanks to home runs from Adames and Garcia. That's the moment you're like, wow, the bullpen kept us in this game, and we've got to reward them. And then the game got really wacky. We go back to the seventh, though. Nolan Arenado got tossed from this game on his way out to play defense because he got rung up on a check swing, and it was the second time he had been rung up, and he wasn't happy. And, you know, pleasantries were exchanged. Hey, I'll send you my Christmas card. You send me that. And then he gets tossed on his way back out to play defense. And then in the top of the ninth inning, I also want to know, I don't like ragging on umpires. I really don't. I remember working this game for Bally Sports, and we're working it here for Milwaukee, watching the game. We have the strike zone box up, and we're like, what is Ramon de Jesus seeing? He was calling some terrible pitches for both sides the whole game. He had a bad night. And Omar Narvaez got called out on strikes in the top of the ninth, and he flipped a switch. He's the catcher. He sees the zone all night. He gets called for a pitch that looked outside. He's arguing. He gets tossed. Counsel goes out to try to save Narvaez from getting a fine. And then Counsel gets tossed. And this is in the top of the ninth inning of a one-run game. You're thinking, well, that stinks. I mean, it just felt like it just felt like a carnival out of nowhere.
Yeah, and Ramon de Jesus, I've had him in the minor leagues when I was a player towards the end of my career, and he had a zone that was floating all the time, and both sides, right? So, I mean, he struggled, so I can understand the frustration there, and I'm not one to really rag on umpires either, but it was a bad night for sure, an especially bad night.
It's important context.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it set the stage. So that's the first out of the top of the ninth against Alex Reyes in a one-run game. It's 3-2. And Avi's coming up against Reyes. Literally, the very next pitch after that whole episode, gone.
Yeah.
Just hooks it fair down the left field line. Barely gets over a leap of Tyler O'Neill. A cement mixer slider that never moved. And just hang it, bang it. Avi ties it, his second homer of the game. And all of a sudden, you saw that shot of the dugout after that home run. Everyone is going bananas. It was so fun to watch. Because in the grand scheme of things, look, you're probably going to win the division. Your manager just got tossed. Your catcher just got tossed. And you're down by a run. Is there going to be a lot of mojo in the dugout? Probably not. But now you just tied the game up. And you tell me what that's like in the dugout venue. Because in my mind, it's like, giddy up, boys. We're winning this game, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's rally time around your manager. It's rally time around the team. It's kind of a little bit of a middle finger towards the umpire who really kind of screwed, you know, your catcher with that really awful call on that breaking ball away that he got rung up on. So there's all those emotions going on. Like you said, you feel a little bit let down. The wind's taken out of your sails after your manager gets tossed. And bam, you tie up the game against one of the best closers at the time, Alex Reyes, in baseball. And then that was kind of the beginning of the end for him, that home run. It kind of turned his season around. He had a 5.60 ERA in 19 innings with six home runs given up after that. Before that, he gave up three home runs, and he had 2.39 ERA. So Alex Reyes really struggled in the stretch run for the Cardinals, and this was the beginning of the end for him.
Yeah, it was absolutely insane. So now the 10th inning is even wilder than that. So you have the placed runner. Luis Urias, the first batter, reaches on an error, on a throwing error. Reyes is still out there, by the way.
Right.
If you're wondering why Mike Schilt got fired, there's part of your reason. Reyes is still out there and throws the ball away. Runners on second and third. Then a pop out to left field. So there's one out. And then another out. So you're all of a sudden you're worried, like, oh, man, they're not going to get the run in. And Christian Yelich is coming up. So Christian started to hit the ball harder in August, was starting to get things moving in the right direction. And all of a sudden, he was down 0-1, and Reyes spikes one. It gets by Yadi, and that's very rare to say. He has a ball get by Yadi. It brings home the go-ahead run. Jackie Bradley Jr. scores on a wild pitch. So now it's a 1-1 count, and Urias is on third. In a 4-3 game at the top of the 10th in St. Louis, and former NL MVP Christian Yelich, in the midst of a tough year, obviously, puts the team before him, drops down a perfect bunt up the third baseline. He might have hit it a little too hard, but his wheels down the first baseline is going to be one of my images of the whole season. His home to first time was 3.79
wow.
seconds.
Wow.
Mr. Scout, tell me how good
yeah,
that is.
Yeah, I mean, if you're batting, if you're actually swinging the bat from the left side, 4.3 seconds is average. If you bunt, it's like 4.2, I think, or 4.1 is average. So 3.79 is ridiculously fast. He got a great jump out of the box too, so that does matter. But I mean, he was absolutely flying. He could sniff that hit, and there was a lot of will on his part to get that run home and to get that hit right there, because obviously he knew that he was struggling, and he took a lot of flack for that, believe it or not. He took some questions after the game, and Council did too. I remember that press conference, and it was a little odd, I thought. But there are questions that had to be asked, I guess, just because your best hitter, your MVP, is laying down bunts. But at the same time, he knew that he was struggling, and obviously we saw it all year long from him. But that's what he had to do to get the win, to get the team put ahead by two runs right there, and I thought that was really cool by him. Obviously, you feel that way sometimes as a player. Doesn't matter who you are. You feel like you cannot get a hit. So he felt like that at that time, and so he laid down a bunt. I thought it was brilliant.
And he wasn't done sprinting yet, because then a line drive to right by Jace Peterson, who was pinch hitting on base. Jace gets a knock to right, and Lars Nootbaar completely misplays the ball. It ricochets into right center field. Yelich never stops running. He had an epic sprint speed from first to home, scores another run. So now it's a three-run lead heading to the bottom of the 10th. It's over. Yes, the placed runner scored against Devin Williams. He gets Harrison Bader on an elevated fastball and a strikeout to end the game. He gets a save in his hometown of St. Louis, and the Brewers win to improve to 74-47 at that point of the season on August 18th. And that is our next game on the countdown for this epic extra innings, memorable Yelich squeeze with two outs. The Avi two-homer game kind of gets overshadowed because of the extras, because he sent the game to extras. That was an awesome game, and the bullpen, 8 shutout innings against the Cardinals after Freddie left early.
Yeah, and I know we're getting long here on this episode, but I just want to mention, too, like hindsight being 2020, if they don't win this game, how close are the Cardinals to finishing off the NL Central with that 17-game winning streak towards the end? Let's say this game was flip-flopped. I do think the Cardinals, it may have played out differently. I mean, they could not lose. When they finally lost, then they stopped, you know, pitching everybody and all hands on deck type of thing. So it was kind of, wasn't as close. It didn't look as close, the final standings in the NL Central. But if they would have won this game was flip-flop, they go on to have that 17-game winning streak. Maybe the Cardinals end up winning the division. Who knows? This was a bigger game than people realize.
Epic game nonetheless. Brewers won that 6-4 in 10. So that's number 14 and number 13 on our countdown. That concludes our Flashback Friday edition of Throwback Thursday, because that makes sense. That's our last episode of the week. Next week's throwback, if you want to tease it, it's also an NL West flavor. Both games at home. One game involves Freddy Peralta, and another game involves, you guessed it, another walk-off. So that'll be next week, but we got another 3 shows next week, Vinny. I'm looking forward to it. I'm happy to be back in Milwaukee, no matter how cold I actually am. And, you know, these are always fun to do for me, and I hope you have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. Always enjoy it, Dom.
Awesome. So this was Locked On Brewers. Thanks for making us your first listen of the day. He's Vinny Rutino. I'm Dom Catronio. Remember to like, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your family, subscribe to our YouTube, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, rate it, tell your friends. Look, we got more content coming, and we're not even in the season yet, okay? So more is coming. We appreciate you listening. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay warm if you're here in Milwaukee, and we'll see you back on Monday for our next Mailbag Monday.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.